Right. Thank you, everybody, for coming to this little seminar by the Hellenic Observatory at LSE. This is the first time I'm doing this with the need of wearing reading glasses, so I will navigate on this. Thank you for coming. Our topic today is entrepreneurship and firm resilience in times of crisis, evidence for Greece. And I'm very, very pleased to have with us Dr. Yannis Kaplanis to speak on this topic. Yannis has been a colleague for many, many years. He is an alumnus of the LSE. He also PhD in economic geography here from LSE. And he is also a co-author. We work together also on the minimum wage committee in Greece back in the 2018-2019 period. But Yannis has followed a very impressive trajectory professionally. He is currently, among other things, Director General of the Hellenic Festival Company, the leading cultural organization running Athens Epidaurus Festival, among other things. Previously, he worked as an economist for the OECD and the Director for Public Governance and Territorial Development, as well as for the Director for Employment, Labour and Social Affairs. In between the two positions that I mentioned, he was also Director General for the Hellenic Industrial Property Organization, the Patent Office, in Athens, and in the past also worked in the economic team of the Mayor of London, as well, of course, as different academic posts at Universitat Rovira Virgili and more recently at Pantheon University. So very diverse experience, but today he's talking to us about, as I mentioned, entrepreneurship and firm resilience in times of crisis with reference to Greece. Yannis has done work on this with other colleagues from Athens. Thanks in part, as he will also tell us, I'm sure, to a Hellenic Observatory Research Grant, which was funded generously by the A.C. Laskaridis Foundation and Vasili G. Apostolopoulos. So he's going to talk to us about this. Before I pass the floor on to Yannis, just to do a couple of kind of homekeeping announcements. So this event is being recorded and should be made available as a, I like that my instructions is that it will hopefully become available. So I would say it should become available as a podcast. As usual, you have time to ask questions. When the presentation gets technical, if there's a question, a burning question that you want to interrupt the speakers, I think you are welcome to do so. But our format is that we have a presentation, we finish the presentation in 45 minutes max, and then we have enough time for a discussion, technical questions, broader questions that the speaker may be able to answer. Yeah, last but not least, our next research seminar is in 2 weeks' time, I believe, on Tuesday, 8 November. Professor Sofia Vasilopoulou, also an LSE alumnus, will be speaking on political trust and satisfaction with democracy in Greece in comparative perspective. And then our next event before that, but not a research seminar, is an event we're having at the LSE Lecture Theatre in the Central Building on titled The Parallax of 1922, the Greco-Turkish War in History, Memory and International Politics with a number of speakers. Wednesday, 2nd of November is our next event. Okay, so all this information and more you can find on the Hellenic Observatory website. So with all these introductory remarks, Yanni, the floor is yours to take us to your paper.
Thanks, Vasili, and thanks everyone for coming. And I'm really glad to be here. As Vasili said, I'm a LSE alumnus, and I really like to be amongst good colleagues and friends. So I'm so glad to thank again the Hellenic Observatory for giving us this opportunity with this grant to do this research. Along with Christos Genakos, Mariana Tagaraki, and Agitos Tsakanikas. Okay. Right. So, the research, the study we did, covers the period of the crisis, and we are looking at entrepreneurship and firm resilience, studying specifically Greece. During the 2008 crisis, there has been a severe impact on business dynamics, and different countries responded differently based on their firm's resilience and policies implemented. The recession in Greece lasted longer and had a profound effect on the economy. We performed a systematic analysis of the impact of the crisis on entrepreneurship and firm resilience. According to administrative data from Greece, the data from the Ministry of Economy, there were 222,000 firm closures and 175,000 openings during the period of 2011-2014. But so far, there hasn't been any systematic study of the firm characteristics and other factors that might affect firm resilience. We tried to fill this gap by examining firm sector and regional characteristics and see how they impact on firm resilience. Sorry. Okay. A significant contribution of this project is that the analysis conducted at the firm level. We use microdata, and to our knowledge, we are the first who use this unique data set. GEMI is the Greek General Commercial Registry, is a business registry that contains all the firms that open a business in Greece. We have this data only for the later period because it was not available for earlier, so we have it for 2011 to 2019. And we also use the data set of ICAP, which is an individual firm database that contains all the firms that are obliged to publish financial data. We perform appropriate empirical and econometric techniques and try to get valuable insights on Greek business performance and their survival rate. What else we do is we have data on patents, trademarks, and design, and we try to examine the interplay between entrepreneurship and innovation. The literature is, well, there's an extensive literature actually on firm resilience. I'll try to be brief on that. Following Jerosky, this is in the paper in 1995, firm entry might be easier than its survival, and this is actually something we see in our data. And productivity and efficiency seem to affect the probability of survival to a great extent. There is evidence of a positive impact of innovation on firm survival, although other studies find mixed results and suggest further research on the subject. Human capital plays an important role, and other firm level characteristics might be important for survival of a firm, amongst others, age, size, legal structure, and ownership. Research investigates the drivers of high quality entrepreneurships, since it appears to be more resilient to economic downturns and a crucial driver for economic development. Important role plays the institutional environment. It has been suggested that institutions could be related to economic growth through entrepreneurship. And a recent study from Greece that has interviews with entrepreneurs shows that, or suggests that, institutional change during the crisis has deteriorated entrepreneurial activity. Researchers have also investigated industry characteristics that might affect firm survival. Amongst others, technology intensity, the competition in the industry, the life cycle of industries and businesses. And coming from the literature from economic geography and regional development, spatial proximity and regional characteristics are considered key factors. In the similar work of Romer and Porter, but also coming through back the work of Marshall on agglomeration economies, the importance of industrial geographic concentration has been suggested, the importance of knowledge spillovers and growth, as well as the importance of innovation systems for both free information and regional economic outcomes. So, as I said before, the data we've used is a unique data set called GME, Greek Journal Commercial Registry. It's like a census, so it covers all business registered in Greece, but there we don't have any information on film characteristics, and we only have entry, exit rates, geography, and industry. So we call this, the focus there is social proprietorship films, really the individual ones. And then we also use the ICAP database that has been used extensively in the literature on Greece. And this will have a longer period and also more characteristics, but there we have the other legal statuses. We don't have the sole proprietorship films. We match ICAP data with Greek patent data from the Greek Patent Office, as well with industrial design data from the same office. And we also obtained trademark data from the Ministry of Economy. It's been really a very hard task to combine all these data sets. And also during the pandemic period, it took us longer. And we managed at the end, there was no key available, and we had to harmonize the data because there was different spelling and different abbreviations. So this was the first step, and the second step was to use all the available data, like name, legal form, postcode, so that we do the matching and overcome any inconsistencies. And here is what we see with the ICAP database for the period of study from 2004 to 2019. We see the entry and the exit rate. We see that they are correlated to some extent. Also, the entry rate had a peak during the boom years, around 2006-2007. On the other hand, the exit rate had its peak close to 2011. And then we see also during the slow recovery period, so 2016-2017, we see also the entry rate to increase again, and the exit rate steadily to reduce. And here we see a bit the analysis at the regional level. Of 13 regions, it's at the NATS 2 level, the analysis. We see at the recovery period, the 2017-2019, that only a handful of regions managed to get close to the levels that they had in terms of entry rate with the initial period, the pre-crisis period. And this is the Thessaly, South Aegean, Ionian Islands, Crete, and Central Greece. And this is the exit rate for the same 13 regions. We see that during the period of the crisis, the regions that were mostly affected were Attica, Central Macedonia, Central Greece, Eastern Macedonia, and Western Greece. And here we do a split according to the financial size of the companies. The small ones, the less than 2 million in terms of turnover, they seem to recover fully in terms of entry rates in the later period, in the post-crisis period. This is not the case for the medium and the large firms. In terms of the exit, smaller firms exit the market at a greater rate compared to the rest of the categories. And the exit rate for medium and large was lower compared to the initial period. And here we will see the analysis according to the industrial sector. It's used in us. And so what we see is that the entry rates in the tertiary sector exceeded in the post-crisis period the levels of the boom period. And this is evident both when compare we do the analysis of the total economy or the comparison takes place within each sector. As far as the secondary sector is concerned, then the recovery is much milder. And here is the levels for the exit rate. And what we see is that the tertiary sector exhibits the highest exit rate during the crisis years. It's the one with red. Okay, here we do the analysis according to the legal status of the companies. I think what is most interesting here is to see that the private companies, IKE, dominated firm entry and exit during the recovery period. There was a new law that passed in 2012 in order to enable the creation and formation of these IKE companies and make it more flexible and more easier for them. And that's why we see that even during the period of the crisis, the private companies, the one at the bottom, is there? No, I can't. Okay, I want to point somehow. So it's here, it's a private. So we see that they grow large numbers during the crisis years, but even more in the post-recovery period.
Yeah. So to give a bit of context, you explained to me in April the special status of IKE companies, but can you explain it again more to the audience? So what's the, because there was a special status that allowed this growth.
Yeah, it's this law, if I'm not wrong, it's 4072 that passed in 2012. And it was, I mean, so the policymakers in Greece, so from the Ministry of Economy, they tried to respond to the need during the crisis for firms to have the possibility to be flexible in terms of opening and in terms of functioning at the end of the day. And then this made really also a lot of change. Many companies change status, legal status. So somehow, sometimes it could be this artificial. It's not necessarily new companies that were formatted. Also, there were companies that they changed legal status because of the benefits that this law offered.
And on your chart, they are defined as
private.
Private.
Private. Yeah.
But it means like zero liability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's IKE. Ιδιωτική κεφαλαιοχική εταιρεία in Greek. Sorry for the Greek. Actually, this is a pattern we will see when we do I'm not going to present now, a more detailed analysis. That, and this is follows also the literature on in terms of the legal status. The more liability you have, the exit rates are lower because exactly because you will be liable, of course. Yes, and then you get you see that you know public limited companies or companies with limited liability, then you don't get this pattern. Okay, and here we see the rate for Kaplan Meier, so it's not me, it's this. Professor Kaplan, who estimated this rate. So what we see here is that in a period, so the analysis time is in terms of years, it's the percent of the firms that managed to survive. So in it's sort of it's more than 85% in 5 years' time. and it has dropped below 8% by the seventh year.
So is this on all?
This for all.
Which
yeah.
year is that?
We start from 2004, yeah.
Yeah. But you show us how it changes over time.
Yeah, we
yeah.
can see that
yeah,
yeah. Here, how
yeah, yeah.
We do some. So what we see here in terms of our resilience, that in terms of the survival rate, as measured by the Kappenmeier survival estimates, we see that most resilient firms are based in the Aegean Islands and then in Crete, and then in central Greece. Kedrick Ellada is central Greece, is the one with green. And then the least resilient firms are in northern Greece and Attica. So Attica is the bottom line. And this could be explained also because it's more dynamic. So it's not only, as I said before, also more firms. They are established in Attica in northern Greece, which includes Thessaloniki, the second biggest city, but also there is where we have also the higher exit rates. And here we have a similar analysis according to the sector. You see that the sector which is more resilient is the primary sector, and then this is followed by the secondary and the least, and the firms that are least resilient are in the tertiary sector. Again, as I said before, also this has to do with the tertiary sector companies being in a more competitive sector, and also there you have more entry and more exit. But here we can see also if IP rights, so IPRS is whether the firm has at least one patent or one industrial design or one trademark. And we see that the firms that have this a good somehow center in terms of giving them resilience in the market. So this is the bottom left graph. And then we see the analysis for patents, the top right, and similar result, top left, trademark, where we don't find a clear pattern is for designs. And we see that in the econometric analysis later on. Yeah, so here we see the results from the YIMI data set, it's sole proprietorship of firms. And
so that was all ICAP.
All that was ICAP. Here we see a very close relationship between entry and exit rates. As I said, we only have the period following 2012.
So, it has, on the previous slide, mm-hmm. I was struck by what seemed to be a much earlier slide. I was struck by the relative stability of the exit rates, whereas on
yeah.
the new slide coming forward, mm-hmm. Keep coming forward, the last slide you've shown us,
yeah.
There is quite a lot of variation over time, but when you showed us the trend line, there was much more variation in the startups, the entry.
Mm-hmm.
Exit was relatively stable. Have I just misinterpreted?
No, no, it's a very good point, actually, and thanks for raising it because it allows me to say something we have discussed and we will say later on, probably discuss. So if we, I'm sorry for passing the slides really quickly. So that's thanks, Kevin.
Yeah,
it's a good point. Yeah. So here the exit rate is somehow it doesn't seem to fluctuate so much during the crisis years. We would expect really a high peak. And what we think might be the case, and this is because also we have here sort of larger companies, it's ICAP, so they're the ones that are supposed, they have to, they're obliged to publish financial data. So we don't have like a a plumber who set up his own company, or like, you know, this kind of people who are, they are somehow self-employed at the end of the day. And what we came across is, and there is literature on that, we want to dig further in later sets, what we call zombie films. So during the crisis, that they, you know, they just don't exit. They just keep their books open, but they don't really work, or they don't have much work to do. And although in this, sorry again, here we have the sole proprietorship films. So these are really small films. Here we have the plumber, we have the individuals who set up, you know, they opened accounts and they have their own small company. So yes. Yeah.
But can I also say that the previous graph, and you don't have to go all the way back again, looks very similar to, well, very similar, consistent with a graph that would show separation and job separation and job creation during the same period. So a lot of the increase in unemployment didn't happen because of people losing their jobs. I mean, I'm not saying people did lose their jobs, but the main effect comes from job creation, so job creation stopped. And that, at least in the kind of part of literature, you know, the part as well, in the kind of more labor literature, is linked to the fact that, you know, very small businesses, so 1, 2, 3 employees, it's very difficult to fire somebody, especially at a time of crisis. You know, you're almost family. So the effect comes from, you know, people not hiring you. So maybe there may be some sort of, you know, this kind of solidarity thing, especially for small firms, although this graph disagrees with me, that why firms survive. So it's not only necessarily that they were ghost firms, but it was, you know, if you are subsistence survival mode, then you keep it, even if you, you know, as long as it generates any income, it doesn't matter if you go down, if your profits are negative.
I think it's probably a similar story with this job creation, as you said. Yeah. So we didn't really see much exit, but the thing is that we saw less exit. Yeah. Yeah, we didn't see much new entries, but we saw less exit. Okay, so this is the Kaplan-Meier estimates for the sole proprietorship dataset. But here the starting point, so the zero is 2012, yeah? So we're in the middle of the crisis, yeah? So, of course, the firms that opened in 2012, they would probably be more resilient than a firm that opened in the boom years. And that's why you see also that these estimates are much higher than the one we saw before when we had all the firms.
So again, is this all firms or new firms? So you look at the survival of new firms or of all firms?
New firms.
New firms, yes.
Yeah. But the new firms that opened in this short period of 2012 to 2019. Before, we had also firms that opened in 2004, 2005, 2006. We don't catch that here. The results are similar when we do the regional analysis. So Attica, the firms that are based in Attica, they're the least resilient. And the higher survival rates are in the Aegean Islands and Crete. And similar results for the sector analysis. The tertiary sector is the one with the orange on the bottom. The firms that are in the tertiary sector the least resilient, and then this is followed by the secondary sector, and the primary sector is the sector where the firms survive more years. What is interesting is on the right graph, we see that agriculture is firms in the agriculture sector are more resilient. We're talking about sole proprietorship firms, really small ones. And the public administration is the least resilient. So this is the empirical model that we follow. We're trying to estimate the exit from the market for a firm. That is a dummy that takes one if the firm exits the market. We use a number of firm characteristics to explain that, amongst others, size, leverage, fixed assets, intellectual property, age, exports, and concentration index. We use fixed effects to control sector, region, or legal status, or also we use firm fixed effects in the most more restricted kind of specification. And the standard errors are clustered at the firm level to control for heteroscale persistent autocorrelation. We use OLS regressions so we can include lots of firm fixed effects. And we have specifications using the logit model and the Cox, what I'm going to present now. This standard model using the literature. The reason is that it doesn't require a specific hypothesis in terms of the theoretical distribution. And we have this in the version of the paper that will come out as a Greece research paper, but here we'll just present qualitatively the main results. Some descriptive statistics. We'll probably move on to our main result. Is there some point? No. Okay, so I'll try to guide you through this. It's probably too small the numbers and too much information. Yeah. So what in the top row is the crisis dummy. So it's a dummy for the period 2019 onwards.
And
2009 onwards. So. That's a nice typo. Thank you, Vasilis. Yeah, it's for 2009 onwards. This is a typo. Thanks for spotting. And we use various controls, mainly firm characteristics. What we see that this is increases the probability exit 1.6 percentage points. So since the baseline likelihood of exit is 10%, this means like up to 16% of increase in the probability of exit. In our last model, last regression, where we use the firm fixed effects, this drops to 5%. So the range, and that's why when we present our concluding remarks, we say that the exit, probability of exit of a firm increased during the crisis years between 5 and 16%. So looking at specific characteristics, we see that size does matter. So the bigger the companies, they have a reduced likelihood of exit, although this is have non-linear effects. This is a convex kind of distribution. Then we have the leverage ratio, and this is mostly positive. So for the firms that have leverage, then the likelihood of exit increases. So this also as expected, as we see in the literature. In terms of the fixed assets ratio, the firms that have more assets or more investment, at the end of the day, they have less likelihood for exit. IP indicator, this is industrial property indicator, IP rights, whether they have a patent, industrial design or a trademark. This also seems to help for films to survive more. In terms of AIDS, we have also a positive relationship. So the older films seem to be more able to survive. And also this relationship is non-linear, it's convex. And the films that do export, they survive more. In terms of films that are based in sectors that are concentrated, then also this reduces the likelihood of exit. You use a number of fixed effects for the region, the sector, they don't alter much the results, quality become the same. The more restrictive specification is the last one, where as said, we find that the price increases the probability of exit by about 5%. So these are the results, more or less, that I just discussed. We have also one model that I'm going to present, where we break the dummy of the crisis period for 2009-2015, and then we have 2016-2019 as the second period, and we see that the results comes mainly from the first period, and the second period is much lower. Okay. So the results from the logic, they are quite similar to the linear probability model. The crisis massively increased the probability of exit. And this is the case in the earlier period rather than the later period. Larger firms that are in concentrated industries that do export and own intellectual property rights are less likely to exit. Firmates plays a smaller role, and leverage does not seem to alter the exit likelihood significantly, so we don't find for the logic model significant coefficients for leverage. Sector, region, and legal status do not change results qualitatively, but play a large role quantitatively. And the results with the Cox model are similar.
So, and what does that mean in the last sentence? They don't change the results qualitatively, but play a larger role quantitatively.
Okay, so they do. Exactly, sorry for that. This is jargon that we use in econometric analysis. So they do not change the results for all the other coefficients for firm level characteristics like the age, the size, and all the rest. But they take more of the of the fluctuation. So they explain more of the variation in the analysis. So it seems like although in the previous model when we have I don't have the R squared here. I should have.
Okay. So you mean basically that the most of the variation in the variable is explained by the fixed effects, which are sector, legal status, and so forth. But whether you include fixed effects or not, it doesn't change the coefficients. Yeah.
No, that here in the linear probability model, when we include region, sector, fixed effects, they don't explain so much of the variation. And this is higher the explanation of the variation in the logic model. Okay. Explain it a bit more clear. Okay, when we do a number of robustness tests that we're going to have in the Greece research paper, we drop the later years. Especially the 2020, and we include all type films, and we drop the sectoral analysis so that we have a high number of firms and that the results don't change qualitatively. I think this is something that we focus a bit more is because also it's the first time that Analysis in Greece utilize this data set of IP rights. We see when we split the econometric analysis amongst the different kinds of IP, designs, patents, and trademarks, you see that designs and designs do not matter at all, do not shelter and do not increase the likelihood of survival for the firms, although the patents and the trademarks reduce the likelihood of exit. And in the more in the last one, which in the last model, which is the more restrictive ones with that includes firm fixed effects, we see that only the coefficient of trademark survives. So at the end of the day, this is really what matters. Actually, this is the first thing that companies do in Greece when they want to start a serious business, let's call it like that. Patents, it's a much smaller proportion of firms that have patents. Also, this doesn't change much over time. That's why when you include firm fixed effects, we don't have much variation and the coefficient doesn't survive. So it seems that overall the conclusion would be that you know both the patents and trademarks matter, and especially trademarks.
From the sample, how many firms have a trademark? So it's like a big proportion of them, and in terms of trademarks, they have a large number. Or okay. Because we see it's an important one, that's why I'm asking.
I don't have it with me. Okay, although. Maybe would be this.
So 1.3%.
Yeah, 1.3%. Yeah, it's any IP, but mainly would be trademarks.
So pretty much are the big players, those, right?
Yeah, it's mainly big.
So could that be just a follow up on this one? Sorry. So because. If you're big enough, you have trademark, or having a trademark helps you not exiting. So where's the causality here? What do you think?
Exactly, it's not a one-way causality, it's probably a two-way, because such that firms that are they're not going to, how can I say, just register a trademark in order to survive. But it's probably that firms that are, they have also all the credentials to survive because they are probably have good human capital, they have good leadership, and they are more, they're the ones that are also going to register a trademark. So it would be part of a, let's say, marketing strategy. So this is one of the many things that they would have. And we see that so I don't think that it's alone that the trademark would shelter a firm from not exiting the market. But it's a signal that the firm is serious about how they want to run the business and how they want to enter the market and somehow try to you know, stay in the market.
So if I would use your data set, sorry, just to finish this off, then I would use it as a proxy. It would be an interesting one, just to see the, you know, how effective it's, you know, to measure in an indirect way those that do the things properly within the market, right? If I wanted to use it, your data set for another kind of analysis within.
Like an IV instrumental value, yeah.
Could be interesting.
Could be interesting, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I suspect I missed the point, but may it not be a property of the market they're in? There are certain kinds of market which make it more attractive, more necessary to have a trademark, and those also have a bearing on the chances of survival.
Exactly, yes, it depends on the sector. There are some sectors, especially products for selling, that you need to have a trademark. Other companies might not be so necessary, especially maybe services. So yeah, definitely depends on the sector that we're looking at.
I was thinking not just the sector necessarily, but the actual kind of product market within the sector.
Okay. Yeah. So you're saying that could be sort of companies that have also different trademarks, yeah, and they have different products that are selling, and this might. So I'm trying to get your argument.
If it's a sub-market where quality, for instance, mm-hmm. they seem to be more important than the price, say, maybe very crudely put it, might you not be both more likely to have a use of trademark and also be more protected against some kinds of threat? Sorry, I'm being very
arguing
about this.
No, I think that's right, yeah. It's a quality attribute at the end of the day of the firm, and this could be signaled by the trademark, so it's something that they are seeking for.
But again, I guess it has a really serious bearing upon whether there's something useful one learns.
Mm.
So whether these things are endogenous, situational factors which have a bearing on survival, whether there's something which you could consciously manipulate and have better policies, seems rather critical.
Well, it's definitely endogenous. On the other hand, in some markets where it's competition, like in the product market, yeah, having a trademark might help you in terms of competitors, so I think it could be both.
Of course, the night issue that Louis mentioned still holds, but then, you can say, okay, you can at least, as a policymaker, say, okay, if I incentivize somehow or educate my businesses to trademark, then it may lead to some sort of causal effect. But then if it's the type of endogeneity that Ian is talking about, it is just a feature of the submarket where you operate. So I think all washing liquids are trademarked. The name of the world, they're all the same, they do the same job. But I don't know why, if you produce a washing liquid, you trademark the name of the liquid. They're all identical. And then maybe this market has this culture, but also has this characteristic that firms that enter this market never exit. Yeah, and then you find that. Then that I cannot manipulate because it's so specific to the sub-market that it's not about educating my businesses. It's a characteristic which completely contingent on the sub-market, if I understand Ian's
point. So what you've shown,
It shows,
Yeah, actually, if you don't have a trademark, then you wouldn't enter this market in the first place,
is in the data, but maybe that's something you can at least explore descriptively. Is the big consideration of trademarks in specific? You probably don't have product quotes, you only have sectors, but still specific.
I think that's very valid points. I think we should do more. Actually, this is our purpose to try to dig further on the IP analysis in the intellectual property rights analysis, and doing that at the sectoral level might help to get some answers, or at least some insights.
And one final one on this one. So the relationship between patents and trademarks, is it a lot? So you would expect that firms with lots of trademarks have more patents or not? Or how does it work? Because I'm ignorant in terms of the dynamics within the market. So I think that's an interesting point.
Well, there are quite different categories of IP, but you have large numbers compared to the rest of the other two categories that they register trademarks, and a very small, much smaller kind of numbers that register patents. So it's quite likely that the firms that registered patent, they might have also a trademark. It's not the other way around.
Sorry for the long introduction.
No, it's good because otherwise it gets monotonous. All right, so I'm not, this is something we did on the side of this work and we want to explore further, but I'm going to present some first results about how film characteristics and the crisis might have affected the sales. So what we want to see here is a film growth. So the left-hand side of the regression has the sales growth of the film, and on the right-hand side we use some lags. Again, this kind of graph is full of numbers, this table is full of numbers. So what we see here is about between, let's say, 5 to 7% of reduction in terms of film growth during the crisis years, it's done in 2009-2018. But what we see in the last model, 13, in the top bottom, see these two numbers. So when we split the period between 2009-2014 and 2015-2018, we see that during the first period we have this reduction in the film growth, and in the second period, 2015-2018, we already see some growth. So this comes much earlier. Of course, this is for the films that have survived. So the ones that exited, yeah? So the ones that stayed as early as 2015 might start to grow again. So in terms of the results, we see also some difference with, so exports, yeah, do really matter, and they seem to be correlated positively with film growth. The same with IP rights, so whether they have at least one IP, intellectual property. Similar with the fixed assets ratio, and the leverage affects negatively film growth. So in terms of the size and the age, we have the opposite of what we find with the survival rates. So we see that the younger and the smaller films grow faster. It's also somehow expected in terms of the more dynamic, although this also it's a nonlinear effect.
Then, so can I also interrupt?
Sure.
So if you go to the, yeah, so the exports here, because the exports is the other thing that can be the end of the 90s. You know, if you're good quality, you survive more, go more, you export. But it's not that if a bad firm exports, all of a sudden they're going to grow. So then the tonight question comes in, and I see that when you include the firm fixed effects, the export indicator disappears. So is it like every firm you have in the sample is either exporting for the whole years or never exporting?
Yeah, we don't have any variation.
I mean, can this be possible? No firm ever stopped exporting in Greece over the last 20 years.
Okay.
Because, I mean, if you did, then you could look exactly at this. Yeah, that's what you want. I'm positive.
Okay, I'll have to check, and that's a good point further than that. Okay. So I said, so the main kind of difference with the previous analysis that younger films grow faster on average, and then so larger films and also smaller films grow faster. So, some remarks, and then this was a systematic examination of the impact of the crisis on entrepreneurship and business performance. We managed to do the analysis over a long time period for the last 2 decades. Attempt to fill the gap by examining film sector and regional level characteristics that might affect film resilience and survival rates. Analysis took place at the film level, and we used two main sources of data. The one that contains very small films, the social solely proprietorship of film data set of YEMI, and also the ICAP database that contains the films that are obliged by law to publish financial data. We managed to match data from patents and trademarks to have some insights on the interplay between entrepreneurship and innovation. Main results, we find that the crisis increased the exit likelihood for a film between 5 to 16%. There are better chances of survival for films that are either larger or have significant fixed assets, so bigger films, lower financial leverage, and films that operate in concentrated industries, but also those that are innovation as using IP as a proxy and export oriented. These results are important not only for designing and business policy increase, but also for other countries that might face similar crises. And some more policy discussion just to instigate it, at least. Exports could be a safe option for survival of films during adverse times. Of course, this indigeneity that Vasily mentioned before could be an issue. Higher fixed assets, which mainly related to manufacturing films, might be desirable, and this can have beneficial effects for survival rates of films. And also, the focus that we see a lot in policy making on startups is important. But we see that all the films, long established films, have a successful record, and it should not be neglected when designing policies. At the same time, we see that the higher kind of growth rates are seen in these younger and smaller films. So this kind of policy discussion is open, and
okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. I'll open it to the others, but I really like this, the last point, because there's this sometimes obsession about sort of venture capital, and in the past SMEs, and this statement SMEs grow faster. It's like, to me, it's like saying that, you know, a young tree grows faster than an old tree, but then what you really want is to have all, you know, grown up trees that produce shade and produce and things, you know. So just to say that a small firm can grow, yeah, okay, but then the end result is that. So I like the last point, so that's almost as an anecdote. So open it up for questions, technical questions allowed, but maybe we can focus more on the policy.
As an anecdote, I would like to take the pass from Vasilis and say that during my years at the patent office, talking a lot with people from the sort of businesses and also young kind of entrepreneurs who were really up to it and wanted to create business. And so I talked to this guy once, he said, you know, I've created 20 startups. I said,
Yes,
exactly. So that's the thing. Because out of these 20 startups, you know, it's very unlikely that many of them would have survived and, you know, like either having a takeover from a bigger kind of company. So, yeah, it's, as Vasily said, we should have some balance on that. Please, mate.
Okay, Kevin first, and then
you obviously place the study in a wider conceptual literature, and the, for example, the author who's almost you but not quite, Kaplan, and there is clearly a model there in terms of expectations. What I'm not clear about, and perhaps you could just crystallize it for me, what are the biggest surprises that you've found in comparison to the wider business studies literature?
Okay.
The top three surprises.
okay.
What wouldn't we necessarily have expected?
Thanks. Okay, so yeah, so yes, mostly in terms of the film characteristics, our results are according to the literature. So yeah, so a film that owes money, that it's less likely that they will survive in the market. The ones that have also innovation. This also the innovation literature was not very clear. Yeah, so it's not. And I mentioned that in the beginning, it's not that films that innovate necessarily survive more. It could be also the case that films that innovate experiment a lot. Yeah, so they might not manage to survive. So the literature is not very clear about innovation. We find mixed results. And also the literature is not clear about the age of the film. So these young versus old films. And that's why they have what they call the liability of the newness of the adolescence and these older films. So sometimes the literature finds that the films that survive is not the older ones, but could be also some young films, because when a film decides to enter the market, most likely for the first few years, it's has taken all the necessary measures to survive, at least for 2 or 3 years. And then you might find that you have a peak of the exit rate following up, like in the fourth or the fifth year. And this could be the case that what they call the adolescence, liability of the adolescence. What we find here, we find, so the literature is kind of divided here and finds mixed results. And what we find is that the older films, they have higher chances of survival. And this is not the case for the younger films. So we find one, we find strong results for the one side of the literature debate.
But doesn't that mean that the growth rates are biased? Right? I mean, if you exclude all the ones, all the small firms with negative growth rates, is it surprising that small firms seem to do better?
Yes, so yeah, if we exclude the ones that exit the market, the ones that stay, we see that the small and young films are doing better. Exactly. There is somehow a selection of bias there. Yeah? You have there in the... so Ian's point is that in the models, in the regression models that we discussed, film growth, we do not have any of the films that exit the market. So we have only the ones that are really resilient and manage to survive. So if we exclude the other ones, then these ones, the young and the small,
And if exit is dependent on size, then when you don't go ahead for selection, then you find the opposite effect of size on the growth. the point. Can I go back to Kevin's question? If you, Kevin, of course, you can have it. But then, you know, in the political science literature, there was a very long debate, or very many years, I guess, about Greek exceptionalism. Mm-hmm. And I think the consensus now is that this is not exceptional, it's just a normal country that occasionally gets into trouble. As we know, even the UK can sometimes get into trouble. So would you then say that, kind of, in this regard, the main message of the paper is that Greece is not exceptional? So firms in Greece are affected, you know, by the same factors, like whether descriptively or causally, yeah, but size, IP, innovation, age, and stuff.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that's a good point. I think we should stress in the paper. But yeah, it doesn't seem to be exceptional. So although we found you know, one side of the literature in terms of the age and the size, you know, other people in the literature have found that, you know,
if I might just add a comment, far be it from me to speak of varieties of capitalism. sometimes we talk about Southern European models, etc. And what you seem to be suggesting is that there's nothing here in terms of entry or exit, which could be related to the type of model of capitalism that Greece and Southern Europe have. In other words, I'm not hearing that there's the exceptionalism of Greece that if you were to study another European country, you might not find very similar results. There's nothing endemic in terms of the model of capitalism here about entry and exit.
So maybe we should definitely dig further, and but I don't think we found some exception for either the Greek or the South European kind of model of the economy.
Okay, so can I skip Philip for a second and go to Kira, because she goes to different varieties of capital.
No, it's not. I'm very happy to have Philip go first.
It's not you started.
No, okay. No, but it's a different question, so it takes us. I just wanted to. So I have a proper question and a self-interested question. So the proper one, I think, relates to something that Vasily said previously, which is about this export dimension. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, kind of, if we conceptualize resilience as being able to adapt to a shock and kind of change strategy so that you survive, even though kind of there has been a shock and your initial kind of way of doing things has been proved to be untenable. Would that mean that, you know, resilience really is, you know, for a firm that was addressed to the domestic market to be able to switch to the export sector during the crisis, whereas a firm that was already an exporter kind of is not necessarily resilient as it is resistant, so it's not so much hit by the shock, right? Because the other markets that it was exporting to didn't lose 25% of their income during the crisis, so it was hit less, and it didn't necessarily adapt its strategy, but it, you know, it just survived because it was lucky, let's say. And I was wondering, is there a way, using your data, to see, to distinguish between those two types of survival? So the survival that was really because the firm changed strategy and switched from domestic to export markets, versus the firm that was already exporting and just continued doing what it was always doing without too much of a, you know, hit to its usual strategy.
Okay, that's a good point related to what Vasily said. I think we should dig further to see the variation in the existing firms in terms of their export strategy. Yeah, so if there were firms that didn't export and they started exporting, or firms that they stopped for a couple of years, and this how this might have affected their chance of survival. So yeah, that's a good point. I think we should definitely try to see. As far as I remember, we didn't have much variation, and that's why we don't report the export coefficient. But yeah, I think it's worth trying.
Can I very quickly ask the self-interested one as well? So I would be, for instance, super curious for my own research to know how resilience varies by sector, by region, right? So if within the same sector, some regions, some even lower even than, I don't know if you have lower regional data than the big regions. But, you know, how that, because then you can control for the sector, so nobody can come and tell you, well, it's just the sector, it's just the, or, well, maybe it's still the sub-market, but it would I think it would have, you know, it would be quite interesting. And would it be possible with your data set
to
do this kind of research?
Yeah, actually, there's a point that we'll go to some assays in the past where we have managed so far, but hopefully we'll do more research on that. So yeah, we have an exact address. We have a postcode for films. So yeah, we do more region analysis, and I'm sure Ian would have any suggestions for that as well. Yeah, so we so far we've only present some descriptive statistics and how you know films performed in terms of survival rates during the before and the crisis years. And our analysis just uses region fixed effects, but we haven't done more on that and can have also variables at the regional level and or trials from knowledge spillovers, kind of different hypotheses that have been discussed in the literature, and we try, you know, I think it definitely enrich our paper. Yeah. So this is some in our to-do list.
Okay, we have a bit more time, so if there's any more questions, please indicate your questions. But then we'll...
Thank you. So I have 2 points as well. So the first one connects to what Kira was saying. So you said that you have data for the sub-regional scales, but do you also have data for the sub-sectoral scales? This is about the descriptive part of your presentation, especially the thing about firms in Aegean Islands and Crete being more resilient and have better survival rates. So I assume a big part of this would have to do with their specialization in tourism and the leisure economies. So would you have data to prove that? Would you have access to this kind of data, or do you just have it on sectoral levels, so tertiary, secondary, primary sectors?
Yeah, so for the ICAP database, so this is the smaller kind of, in terms of size, database that has the firms that are obliged to publish financial data. We have the address of the firm. So this way, of course, we can find the NAT3, so where it, which sub-region is dislocated. But to construct data, aggregate data at the sub-regional level, this is a task here. So what I'm trying to say is at the regional level, we can have university degree holders, yeah, some level, a measure of, let's say, human capital at the regional level. We won't be able to have that at the sub-regional level, unless you can suggest a way to...
I understand. My question is more about the sub-sectoral level.
Sub-sectoral are the same, so for each firm, we have it at the sub-sectoral level.
You do, okay.
But again, to construct
It would be so much for the regressions, more for the descriptives, because you know when you saw them, then you say, okay, you know, in Crete, firms are more resilient. Well, if they're hotels, they just wait for the tourists to come next summer, so they are resilient. So then you have to compare a hotel to Crete in Crete with a hotel in, I don't know, Thessaloniki, and then you can say hotels in Crete are more resilient than hotels in Thessaloniki, because otherwise. You know, yeah, okay, you have different businesses in different places, obviously they have, you know. Yeah,
it's just that the concentration of the tourism sector is much larger in these islands compared to the rest of the economic activity there.
Yeah, in terms of the descriptive, we could do, we cannot probably include in the econometric analysis, yeah, but in terms of the descriptives, this could probably show some trends that could...
And my second point has to do more with your concluding remarks and your policy recommendations, which again relates to this tourism sector, because it seems to be one of the main sectors in which Greece is specializing at the moment, and it's also being boosted by the Greek government. So you didn't make any recommendations in this direction at all. It seems that you're focusing more on industry and on the productive sectors, material and immaterial, but not really on the service sector in this regard. So this does not play any role in your recommendations, right?
Well, I've seen before the tertiary sector is the one that shows the highest volatility in terms of. Okay, sorry. So both lower survival rates. This is what I saw. Here in terms of the entry highest, but also in terms of the exit. So the red is during the crisis years, so the tertiary sector is the one that kind of peaks. There is, as between us, we discussed that, and what we try to focus in our concluding remarks is like the kind of neglected aspects of the policy analysis in terms of, let's say, manufacturing, because especially in Greece, there is this focus a lot on the tourism and the services. But what we want to show is, okay, which firms would have high fixed assets? This would be the manufacturing. We should have a policy for that. It is somehow, as we see, a bit of a neglected kind of aspect. And it's also what Vasilis said earlier, you know, like it's all this sort of focus on venture capital or new firms, on startups. We don't see much. And what probably we saw and we found interesting is that also the older firms, the larger firms, and also all kind of firms with higher fixed assets, so manufacturing firms, seem to matter, and we, you know, policy should also tackle these kind of firms as well. So, yes, I think we focus more there, but I think that an analysis as you suggested, and I'm thankful for that, that we see the subsector kind of try to dig further below the bigger picture. This might help us to tackle aspects like, you know, like what happens with tourism or specific kind of subsectors in the service industry.
Yeah, but it's more of a comment, but if there are other questions.
Can I just like just to connect with this? So I guess, I don't know, in my mind it matters, but probably, hopefully it does matter. That, you know, whether the more high resilience of manufacturing, let's say, or secondary sector firms is because they're less food use. So, I mean, you know, you have some costs here, you have a factory or something. So it's not very easy to close and open, very open. And also, you have some collateral as well. You know, it's not, you know, as a service sector, the capital base of your service sector firm is usually lower than in the. So it is kind of important, I think, to disentangle this. It's like, you know, is it through the banking sector that I can get a collateral alone and survive, and or is it that somehow, you know, because the entrepreneur is constrained, they cannot take the factory and go across the border, then those firms survive, rather than, you know, whereas with the accounting firm, they can just, you know, not even move, you know, they can just register somewhere else and still work remotely. So which of the footloose element or the capital access element one would be resilient?
Okay. I think a third possibility for me is, could it be that there are firms which have good solidly based expectations of the growth of their markets, who actually invest in assets? So there's something to do with the situation and their knowledge of it, which also separates them out. Whereas there's a lot of other, you know, I'm struck by thinking about new firms entering. It seemed to me that new firms entering, you know, you might stylize some of them as having a bright idea and some of them as being really desperate to do anything. And desperation is easier if you don't actually have to invest an enormous amount in it. So some of these things must come into the picture, isn't there? So I mean, this is just trying to add a third line to the synthesis too.
All about endogeneity.
Sorry?
It's all about endogeneity.
The one thing, I'm not sure if I'm correct. It was in Attica a higher rate of exits or not? I remember the descriptives at the beginning, right? Attica had a higher rate of exits rather in comparison to other areas, right?
Had a lower couple of names.
Okay.
So would that
this exit, yeah.
Would that say anything from your experience from the Greek market? Like why is that happening? And in relation to the questions that have arisen before, like you know, about having fixed assets being based maybe in an area that you, the local economy depends on you, maybe you're in Attica and you're more like you know, an office or whatever that nobody cares if you exit because it's not fixed assets around you. Or could the geography in any way, like what I'm trying to connect here is that geography matters in relation to the questions and the comments like Vasilis and Ian mentioned, or do you think it's not the case?
It does matter, and the thing is, Vasilis Attica has a higher entry rate, so said these are quite correlated. Attica is the center of to a large extent of the economy. Most of the businesses are there, most of the employment is there, so it is somehow expected that you have higher entry and exit rate. Actually, necessarily is not a bad thing. Okay, if a company exits and then another company enters and then you still, you know, they manage to absorb employment and you have highly qualified employees that, you know, they are set within this pool of human capital, then this is not necessarily a bad thing. What we're trying to see if it's during a crisis, even efficient or kind of healthy firms, they exit that otherwise they would not, and this might have the adverse effects in the economy and the society as well, because otherwise entry and exit is not.
But is that related, like, if I think of productivity and additive value in the economy, so let's forget about how healthy it is or if it happens, or about the market, you know, and let's think about how you can grow in terms of quality the economy and have more value added, produce better stuff, have increasing productivity, etc. And would that increased exit and entry rate in Athens, for example, would that hinder? Or it's something that is not related because it's like the knowledge and the know-how survives, and then there's another company that picks that and continues, you know, takes the lead on that. Are they related in any way?
So I'm trying to catch your.
What I'm trying to say is that if we have a lot of entry and exit within a few years, then that means that there's no stability, like, okay, in terms of employment and everything. People are still employed, so they have the salary and they move on. But in terms of value added, as we grow as an economy, and in terms of how productive we are, in terms of you know, comparing with other industries in Europe, for example, does it hinder the level of the quality of the product that we produce and the level we develop in terms of innovation if we have this rate of fluctuation, variation in how firms?
I think it probably depends if the quality of the firms that enter is enter. So, in terms of the value add, as you say, it's equal or better or worse than the ones that exit. So, you could say that, you know, if the firms that enter lower kind of quality companies, yeah, then you would have an issue. Otherwise, I don't think. Problem with like having high numbers of entry and exit, as long as, you know, this sort of vibrant economy where, you know, people can get jobs and they can switch between jobs, and entrepreneurs can you know, open, like register a new company, try, experiment, you might close, you might open a new one. So if this is how the economy works, the problem would be if you have in terms of a severe crisis where companies exit, there is no way to have new companies formed, people lose their jobs, and you have all these adverse effects in the economy and the society at the same time.
Okay, I'm afraid we have to stop here. We went past our time. Kevin, if the comment is burning, you can make it now, otherwise we'll do it perhaps over the pint. Thanks for coming, thanks for staying for the seminar. The lecture slides will also be online, and there's a paper coming out as a discussion paper in the Hellenic Observatory Greece series, if you're further interested. So please join me in thanking our speaker in the use of